So you have this complex variability of energy supply and an equally complex variability in consumer demand. And so you need a system. You need something in the middle that just balances the two out. So when you've got too much renewable power, a way of storing it, and when you've got too much demand, way of giving it back. What you do by the increase in density is one of two things fundamentally. So to get the same performance with water, you can reduce the vertical elevation by, again, proportionate to the increase in density and still get the same performance. And the advantage of that is that it opens up an order of magnitude or several orders of magnitude more sites.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vedya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands that are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we talk with Stephen Crozier, CEO of Re-Energize, High Density Hydro. Stephen is based in London, UK, but he joins us from Warsaw, Poland. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here, Vidya. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I should thank you. I know you had a long flight with delays and everything, but you made it in time for the recording.
A few delays, but yeah, no, the journey from the airport was super quick. So we had a keen Polish taxi driver who was keen to get there very quickly. So that was quite exciting.
So now on to our topic. You know, world leaders are paying more attention now than before about the warnings about climate change, making efforts to seek energy that is not derived from fossil fuels. One of the forms of renewable energy is hydroelectricity. But even in the ancient times, the Greeks used hydropower for their flour mills. The Egyptians had water screws for irrigation. Give us a simple lesson in physics. How can we harness energy from water?
So harnessing energy from water, as you say, is a super old activity, you know, simple water wheels to turn flour mills or whatever. It's been out for an awful long time. The basics of it are very simple. It's the vertical elevation you have. So the further it drops, the increase in the power, and the more volume that goes down that drop, the more energy you have available. It's very much a relationship to the vertical elevation. And one of the things that hydropower did was to change it from just running down the river to being able to pump it back up again. And so you effectively created a hydropower store with two reservoirs, one at the bottom and one at the top, often with 300 to 500 meters of vertical elevation difference. I'll have to translate that into feet. So that's something like 1,000 to 1,500 feet, that sort of feeling. And the advantage of that is then suddenly you can store energy as well, or electricity. And so you pump it up and then you release it again and generate electricity back through a turbine. So it's very much an evolution of this very old.
What you are talking about is a pump storage system, is it? Or?
That's right. So it's a pump storage system. So it's effectively like a big water battery that you use a mountain to sort of hold your energy. It's a simple concept, but most people are very familiar with batteries but don't necessarily know that this form of energy storage has been around for over 100 years. It's an incredibly mature technology. And first of all, it was built during the 20th century. It was generally built because you had lots of baseload power from coal and nuclear often, which was just turned on and then it was running and running and running. And if you can't use the energy when you need it, you either have to waste it or you have to find a way of using it. And so pumped hydro was built to take that excess from nuclear power or coal power fire stations, which are running the whole time, and store it overnight when people are asleep and much less power is being consumed. And then when the demand comes in the mornings and the evenings, it would be released again and provide that additional electricity for the peak powers. So that's how traditional pumped hydro works. And that was used successfully throughout lots of the 20th century across, you know, many, many parts of the world. And pumped hydropower still accounts for around 95% of the world's energy storage. And what we're doing at Re-Energize is somewhat of a little twist on that, which I'll come back to. So pumped hydropower was used to balance nuclear and coal in the 20th century. But now with the coming of renewables that we've increasingly had over the last 15, maybe 20 years, is that we have a different problem. We don't have constant base load and variable demand. We now have variable supply from renewables. So with solar, you get it during the day. You don't get it at night. If you're in the far north on world, then you get much more in the summer than you do in the winter. And then with wind, there are places which are windy and places which are not so windy. And you have this very much variable supply, electricity supply coming from renewables, which creates a different set of problems. But again, you have this mismatch between intermittent renewables, and so it can be from hydropower. So again, with hydropower, you tend to get more in the winter when there's more rain, and so you get more flow, so there's more power there, and less in the summer, and sometimes it can even stop in the summer. So you have all these different types of renewable energies, which are either seasonal or have their daily cycles, or in the case of wind, might have a twice weekly cycle. So you have this complex variability of energy supply and an equally complex variability in consumer demand. And so you need a system. You need something in the middle that just balances the two out. So when you've got too much renewable power, a way of storing it, and when you've got too much demand, way of giving it back.
The premise of all this energy is that energy cannot be created or destroyed, only transformed. So you are taking the energy from the velocity, or rather hydroelectricity is taking the energy from the velocity of the fall of the water and taking that, capturing it, and using that to power another thing. And your invention, we'll come to it, but is so topical in my life is because Mindful Business is now moved close to Niagara Falls, and where Nikola Tesla was one of the first people to transmit the electricity using AC current.
Yeah, it's one of the first huge projects was just upstream from Niagara Falls, and it's still an impressive set of engineering, and considering how long it's been there and how long it's been providing energy for, it's just amazing. And assuming it carries on raining in the northern American landmass, and then it's going to carry on being there. It will be there forever, or the potential will be there forever. Obviously, things run out. You know, it's been an amazing source of energy for the people in that area, and will continue to be so. So it's super impressive what you can do from hydropower, and but also what you can do from increasingly from other renewables, which is, and Nikola Tesla was one of the people who was groundbreaking in enabling us to do this type of thing. Some of his thinking was in advance of his time, and we've been using it for well over 100 years. So it's amazing.
So what would be the optimal elevation? Is there an optimal elevation, or is it a formula between the velocity in which the water falls down and the height? Or
the key thing about hydropower is elevation. So when you double the elevation, you double the power, or you can halve the size.
It's pretty linear, is it?
Yeah, it's entirely linear. So you can either double the elevation, and if you have the same amount of water flowing, then you'll get double the power. Or if you double the elevation, you can volumetrically half the water flow and achieve what you did before you had double the elevation. So it's entirely linear between elevation and power, or water flow and elevation. So if you have very low, and it's called head in the hydropower industry, if you have very low head, then what you get is you need huge volumes of water. And when you go to very high head, you need much, much smaller volumes of water. So each time you double it, you can halve the volume of water. For example, our re-energized high-density hydro projects, we talk about an envelope between 75 and 300 meters, which is, 200 feet to 900 feet, something like that. So that's the envelope that we're talking about. But for us, a project at 75 meters is four times as big for the same effect as something at 300 meters. That just gives you an idea of why vertical elevation is so important. And that's true of all hydropower systems.
I've visited Niagara Falls like three or four times the last few months, and every time it's breathtaking, it's spectacular.
I mean, in terms of hydropower projects, it's not super high, but in terms of the volume of water, it's absolutely huge.
since we are able to get the electricity, we were able to get as much hydropower from those falls.
Exactly, yes.
So what is the density of water?
Your American listeners are going to hate me because they're going to have to Google how to translate it. So the density of water is 1 liter of water. So this is 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters of water. 1 liter is 1 kilogram. 1 cubic meter of water is 1 ton. So it's the metric system makes it super easy to work out what the density of water is. And 1 ton of pure water is how the metric system is derived in terms of weight. So that's, find something common and use that to base your weight system off. So that's how it's done.
The density of water is the base for other densities.
That's right. Something like seawater is slightly denser. So if you had a cubic meter of seawater, then it's probably 1,050 kilograms. So it's so the salts in it effectively increase the density slightly. When you increase the density of something, you get an increase in performance equivalent to the increase in the density. And again, it's an entirely linear relationship, which is what we're trying to do at High Density Hydro, doing our High Density Hydro solution, which is to increase the density, which means we can make projects smaller or reduce the vertical elevation.
So if you increase the density of water, would the amount of electricity that you're able to generate change?
So what we're doing is it's an entirely mechanical systems in terms of it. So you pump this high density fluid up. It takes more energy to pump it up than you would take to pump up water. The density of our fluid is 2.5 times the density of water. So this is just over the density of concrete. So it's significantly different. And so we have a fluid that's, we call it the density of concrete, that we're pumping up. So that takes more energy than it would for water. So the increase of energy it takes is proportionate to the increase in density. So 2.5 times more energy to pump it up. And then when it's up there, you have 2.5 times more energy than you would have had with water. And so when you release it, you effectively generate at 2.5 times the rate that you would with water. So the round trip efficiency is the same as you would get with water. So your audience might be going, well, why bother then? if the round trip efficiency is the same, what you do by the increase in density is one of two things fundamentally. So to get the same performance with water, you can reduce the vertical elevation by, again, proportionate to the increase in density and still get the same performance. And the advantage of that is that it opens up an order of magnitude or several orders of magnitude more sites. So when we're driving in our cars or going on the train or whatever, we know that there are many more hills at, say, 300 feet than there are at 750 feet.
That's really fascinating. Where are the possible locations of your solution?
You can deploy your energy storage, your water battery type projects, or your high density hydro battery type projects close to where you need them. So you can co-locate them with wind farms, or you can have them near to solar farms, or you can place them in places where there's congestion on the grid, so there isn't enough capacity on the grid lines to push the electricity through all the time. So you store it locally where that congestion takes place, and then you can fill your store, and then when there is the congestion is gone, you can then release it again, so you get a much more use of your grid infrastructure. Or you can place them near where you've got the demand, and so you can store it while you've got excess energy coming through to the consumer, say maybe overnight, or if it's in an area with lots of solar during the day, and then store it for the consumers when the sun's gone down or the wind's not blowing. So it just gives you a vast amount more opportunities.
Basically, problem most of the energy solutions is you're unable to store it. Even hydroelectricity, we think we are turning on a switch and, we're getting it, but these are these turbines which are turned on and off based on the demand. There are very few ways to store it. As a solar, wind has its challenges. There are some solutions now to store solar and wind, but like you said, the grid is crowded often, and you still, though you generate it, you're not able to store it and use it as required.
There's no real way of storing an electron. When you've got the electrons flowing, you've got to push enough electrons in at one end that you're using at the other. And if you want to store it in between, if you're pushing in too many electrons from the generators, and there isn't enough being taken out at the other end, you have to take it out and you convert it into something else. And so battery is a electrochemical system. So you're going from electricity to through a chemical reaction. And then when you want it back again, it's a chemical reaction that delivers it back. For us, we're using a mechanical potential, so using gravity's potential to store it in a different way. And you can store it as heat or cold, but you have to change it. You can't just keep hold of an electron.
The way I'm visualizing it is that the kids have slime. Your product is almost like slime, and it's going at such a slow pace that it's holding on to the energy and going up, and then it comes down and it has captured all this energy on its way up. Is that correct?
It's a good analogy, yes, but it's actually not at all like slime. So for American audience, it flows like half and half. Flows like a cream or something that you might put in your morning coffee. The thing about creating something that is much more slime-like or honey-like or something like that is viscosity is not your friend. When things are viscous and sticking to the sides, it takes more energy to move it. You get losses in the system from having something very viscous. So high density is great and low viscosity is great.
What about this liquid? Is it toxic? Is it safe for the environment?
Even though we're in a closed loop system, that something that you absolutely need to do is you don't want to ever have a spill, and you put in lots of management systems to make sure that that doesn't happen. But you have to plan for the fact that something sometime will go wrong. And so the fluid has to be environmentally benign. It has to be non-toxic, that if you did have a spill, then it would absolutely not kill fish, or there would be no damage to the environment as a result of it. Those are some of our key criteria for our high density hydro. I remember when I was talking about the reduction in vertical elevation, I had a second point I was going to make about the advantages of a high density hydro system, which was rather than reducing the vertical elevation, the other thing you can do is make projects volumetrically smaller, proportional to the increase in density. And this gives you a huge opportunity for cost savings. So if you can reduce your construction costs by 60%, and in a traditional pumped hydro energy storage project, roughly 65% of the cost of a project is civil engineering. So if you can reduce that cost by 60%, because it's volumetrically smaller, suddenly you have an economic advantage. Now, we do have to buy the fluid, which cancels out a proportion, or depending on the vertical elevation, depends how much of a proportion it cancels out. It gives you a huge opportunity for cost saving. And then when you put together the cost savings and the reduction in the height, then suddenly you can think, well, actually, we can start manufacturing these turbines for our high density fluid in more volumes, which means that you can then commoditize them and drive the cost down of the project.
Your system is almost like a closed loop hydropower system. It's almost like self-generating. There's no need for new inputs, and hence the low marginal cost of generating more energy. How does it work?
One of the, exactly as you described, it's a closed loop system. So you take renewable energy, you run pumps, you push the fluid up a relatively small hill, keep it there until you need the energy back, release it through turbine and regenerate electricity. The principle is very simple. One of the real advantages of the creation of a high density fluid, of creating your own fluid, in addition to the reduction in vertical elevation, and in addition to the shrinking of the project, because it's a closed loop system, suddenly you can take this to a place where there's water shortages because it's closed. So traditional pumped hydropower is in places of high rainfall almost exclusively. So that's around 25% of the world's land area. So suddenly we have a closed loop system, so we're not subject to evaporation in the same way. We can go to a desert or a desert city and actually put these type of projects. So the Middle East is a potential market for us, or parts of North Africa, which are really hot and dry, parts of the United States, where you would